A neuroscientist once received a peculiar package in the mail, an expensive, cryptically designed book titled Being or Nothingness, filled with holes cut into page 13 and nonsensical statements. She wasn't alone. Academics worldwide were receiving identical copies, anonymously sent with no clear purpose. The trail led to Sweden, to a man spinning elaborate lies about French women and railway bridges, and eventually to a psychologist hiding behind a pseudonym. What began as a literary puzzle became something far more unsettling, a gateway into understanding how a single person's mental peculiarities can send ripples across continents. It raised an uncomfortable question. What if madness, not rationality, is the true engine driving our world? This strange beginning launched a journey into the shadowy realm where psychology, power, and manipulation converge. The search for psychopathy answers led to Scientology's Citizens Commission on Human Rights, who'd exposed psychiatric abuses for decades, including Tony, allegedly trapped in Britain's Broadmoor Psychiatric Hospital after faking mental illness. Inside L. Ron Hubbard's preserved mansion, surrounded by Islamic tiles and a mural depicting British figures as monkeys, the strangeness intensified. Church videos proclaimed Hubbard as smart as Jesus and Muhammad combined. Tour guides reverently displayed a Coca-Cola syrup stain from his soda machine like a holy relic. Hubbard had described antisocial personalities as people who cannot feel remorse or shame and appear quite rational, remarkably similar to psychopaths. The church had won genuine victories, including exposing Australian psychiatrist Harry Bailey, whose experimental treatments killed dozens. Facing prosecution, Bailey left a suicide note: "Let it be known that the Scientologists and the forces of madness have won." Despite questionable motives, the Scientologists had led to Tony, and Tony's story would crack open something profound about how we label madness. Tony arrived at Broadmoor at 17. Now 29, he'd spent over a decade trying to prove his sanity, an impossible task. Every normal behavior became evidence of pathology. Discussing scientific articles about bumblebees, recorded as "thinks bees can sniff out explosives." Volunteering to garden, proof he could only function in a hospital. Stopping cooperation, evidence of being cunning and manipulative. His original con was disturbingly effective. He'd faked CIA persecution, described people with black eyes instead of real ones, and claimed hurting people felt better than sex. All fabricated to avoid prison for brutally beating a homeless man. But here's the twist. His chief psychiatrist confirmed Tony had faked mental illness, then added, "Most psychiatrists who have assessed him have considered he suffers from psychopathy." Faking mental illness to escape punishment was itself evidence of psychopathy, the manipulative, calculating behavior expected from such individuals. Tony's clever deception had trapped him in a diagnostic cage with no escape. Bob Harris' career pivoted from rehabilitation to identification after inmates sabotaged him. One made him a ridiculous uniform, another cut his brake cables. His experiments revealed the psychopath's signature. When warned of electric shocks, normal prisoners showed spiking fear responses. Psychopaths didn't break a sweat. This led to Hare's 20-point PCLR checklist: glibness, grandiose self-worth, pathological lying, lack of remorse, shallow emotions, parasitic lifestyle, poor behavioral controls, impulsivity, failure to accept responsibility. Training videos showed the patterns. A man describing breaking a child's arm with chilling flatness. It just snapped, calling himself the puppet master while manipulating a teenager to attack his parents. Then Hare made a startling admission. "I should never have done all my research in prisons. I should have spent my time inside the stock exchange as well." The real danger wasn't locked away. It was running the world. Psychopaths in power don't commit serial murders. They destroy economies and societies. Harvard's Martha Stout confirmed they're everywhere, often charming, studying normal humans while feeling nothing. They crave power and winning, explaining why the higher you go up the ladder, the greater the number of sociopaths you'll find there. Emmanuel Toto Constant, former Haitian paramilitary leader responsible for horrific atrocities, seemed humble and emotional during a prison visit, desperately wanting to be liked. Then the truth emerged. If people like you, you can manipulate them to do whatever you want. His need for approval was purely tactical. Al Dunlap, as Sunbeam's CEO, closed plants across rural America, firing half the workforce while share prices soared from $12.50 to $51. His Florida mansion featured predatory animal sculptures, stone lions, swooping eagles, hawks clutching fish. When locals in devastated Shibuda, Mississippi, learned Dunlap lived in a mansion rather than prison, their faces darkened with shock. These weren't monsters hiding in shadows. They were celebrated leaders whose ruthlessness was mistaken for genius. Reality TV producer Charlotte Scott developed a system for finding the right sort of madness. She researched potential guests' medications to determine if they were too mad or just mad enough for television. Schizophrenia was off limits, but Prozac was perfect. They're upset, but depressed enough to see a doctor, so probably angry. This exploitation sometimes ended in tragedy. After Extreme Makeover producers coached Delise's family to mock her appearance, her bipolar sister Kelly, consumed with guilt, took a fatal overdose. Meanwhile, psychiatry itself had become entertainment. Robert Spitzer's DSM-3 ballooned from 65 to 494 pages, suddenly qualifying over 50% of Americans as mentally ill. The manual sold over a million copies, far more than there were psychiatrists. Drug companies celebrated having hundreds of new disorders to medicate. Children's books like Brandon and the Bipolar Bear normalized diagnosing toddlers with conditions that don't exist before adolescence. 4-year-old Rebecca Riley died from antipsychotics prescribed for bipolar disorder diagnosed at age 3. Before her murder conviction, Rebecca's mother admitted, maybe she was just hyper for her age. More than a year after the mysterious book arrived, Tony's tribunal at the Paddock Center, a dangerous and severe personality disorder unit with pastel walls and red panic buttons, lasted just 5 minutes. He would be freed. Independent reports revealed his troubled childhood with an alcoholic mother, raising an uncomfortable question. Is the difference between a psychopath in Broadmoor and one on Wall Street simply being born into a stable, wealthy family? Tony's clinician acknowledged high levels of some psychopathic traits, while criticizing Hare's approach of treating psychopaths almost as if they are a different species. He emphasized, "You can never reduce any person to a diagnostic label." Hare defended himself, "It's dimensional. I use psychopath as a convenience term." Yet he admitted, "My gut feeling, deep down, is that maybe they are different." Weeks later, a package arrived from Gothenburg, a copy of Being or Nothingness, with a card containing just two words, "Good luck." The madness business reduces people to their maddest edges. Between the genuinely dangerous and the perfectly sane are overlabeled people who become nothing more than splurges of madness in the minds of those who benefit from it. We live in a world where psychopaths may run our institutions while troubled individuals get locked away for scoring too high on checklists.